to the website to find out more about all those great events. And we're excited to be partnering in the community with so many good partners.
That was a ton of information in a very short amount of time, Monica.
lots of stuff coming up, it sounds like. Yes. Thanks, as always, for filling us in.
Yeah.
And yeah, we'll talk to you next week.
We'll see you next week.
See you soon.
Thanks.
الله يفتق قلوب الناس الحطة وبيني وبينك انت قمرنا العالي عين القزالة عينك انت قمرنا العالي عين القزالة عينك
You've been listening to the KBOO Evening News here on KBOO Portland. Up next is Right to Survive Radio.
Artichoke Music, Satori Men's Chorus, and Mark Bosnian will present Songs of Community, a benefit for KBOO Community Radio, Thursday, November 13th, 7:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. This concert celebrates Portland's love for local music and local community radio. Tickets are available in advance from brown paper tickets or at the door. All proceeds benefit KBOO. To learn more, go to the KBOO website and click under Community Events on the right side of the homepage. That's KBOO.fm. Songs of Community, a benefit for KBOO Community Radio.
Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Triangle Productions run of Five Lesbians Eating Quiche, starting November 28th and ending on December 20th at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza in Portland. This is a comedic look at the window of 1956's Susan B. Anthony Society for the Sisters of Gertrude Stein, as they sit in their renovated community center, sharing secrets as the threat of atomic apocalypse nibbles at their heels. Again, that's the Triangle Productions performance of Five Lesbians Eating Quiche at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 Portland. I'm Ibrahim Mubarak of Right to Survive. On this show, we go to Ground Zero of Portland, Oregon, and report news and stories that corporate media don't cover. We bring the uncut reality of poverty from the perspective of Portland's homeless residents. We make the invisible audible.
My name is Julie McCurdy. I'm a co-founding member of the Right to Survive activist group, which is a collective of both the unhoused and the housed community. We came together in the direct response to the unmet needs of the unhoused community. Our purpose is to make the invisible audible. Our desire is to bring our challenges to the table while presenting alternative solutions. I'm not into negative radio, and I'm not into just dwelling in the problem. I want to see the solutions.
This is not healthy.
Man.
I am not wealthy.
What I do, have the power to break the chains.
Doing what's right, you
might.
Knowing that your life
truth might hit you.
I want you to think it's
suicide, y'all, but we gon' change the game.
Today on Right to Survive Radio, we will speak with veterans who have experienced homelessness after serving in the military. Last month, Right to Survive reported on serial rapist Ronald Tarwater, who had managed to get loose in the community. His targets being primarily unhoused and mentally ill women, Right to Survive's response upon learning that he was loose was to educate the public with flyers and to do safety patrols. Ronald Tarwater was apprehended recently, due in large part to the patrols that passed out flyers and his picture. So huge thanks, really, seriously, huge thanks to anyone who participated in and helping to capture him. Rather than guess at what potential outcomes could or should happen as a result of his capture, what we're going to do instead is to keep you updated as the case unfolds. Thanks for joining us at Right to Survive Radio at KBOO 90.7. Remember, folks, if you want to join us at the listening party, that's at Sisters this week, which is Northwest 6th and Davis, between 6 and 7 p.m. I hope to see you there.
When I started to do research for this show, I wanted to interview the Veterans Administration because no one from the VA would return my call. This is the best interview we got.
You have reached the Portland VA Medical Center. If you're having a medical emergency, please hang up and dial 911. If you're having thoughts of harming yourself, please call the Suicide Prevention Hotline at 1-800-273-8255.
In October of this year, Democracy Now! Reported that over 5,700 American soldiers have been killed in Iraq and Afghanistan. That count does not include those veterans who commit suicide or die from war-related issues after returning home from military service. Also, a new investigation into California veterans and active service members revealed that three times as many veterans are dying soon after returning home than those being killed in Iraq and Afghanistan combined, according to the report published in the Bay Citizen and the New York Times. More than 1,000 California veterans under 35 died between 2005 and 2008. We talked to unhoused veterans in Portland, and this is what they had to say. This is Ibrahim Mubar from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM. And this segment, we're talking with homeless veterans, and today I'm talking with...
Ben.
Are you presently homeless?
I'm living in what to consider transitional housing. I'm paying like $375 a month for a little tiny little room, not much bigger than an elevator.
What does it feel like to be a veteran?
I feel like I served my country well, but yet when we come home and when we get off active duty, we're just kind of like kicked to the curb. You know, they don't want to take care of the veterans. And I feel like sometimes that, you know, I stood up for this country. I put my life on the line for this country. But yet they're not willing to reach out and help in a lot of ways. There are good organizations out there that are trying their best to reach out, but they don't have all the funds that they need. They don't have the housing that's needed because of the funds. And I just feel like sometimes the American public has turned their back on the veterans.
Do you think the government or the military also turn their back on the veterans?
Yes, I do. I feel like our government has turned a blind eye towards us and said, well, you went ahead and did your job. You done what we needed you to do. And, you know, sorry about your luck now. You know, that's how I feel. You know, and sometimes the public in general kind of follows what behind the government has told them, which the government isn't giving them the whole situation. I just did some research by myself on the state of homelessness in the United States for American veterans. As of 2 years ago, one out of every four homeless people were veterans. That's too high. I can imagine today it's probably about 50% of the people that are on the streets are homeless veterans. Here we laid our lives down on the line to come back and find out you might not have a job, you might not have a family left. You might not have a place to live. That's the way we think, our vets. That's, to me, is a shame on this country. And I love this country to death. And, you know, if I had the chance to go ahead and put my life back on the line, I'd do it all over again. But I think we need to look at how the vets are being treated and find out what needs to be done. Like, we need more mental health services. We need more housing, you know, especially with those coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan now. They're coming back goofed up in the head. And what are we doing? We're putting them on the streets. We've taught them how to kill somebody, but we didn't tell them how not to do it.
Why did you join the military?
For one, I needed some discipline in my life. I wanted to do my duty for my country because this is where I was born at. This is where I grew up at. And my country has done a lot for me, but yet I needed to do something for my country. And I believe in our freedom. I believe in what this nation was built on. But yet to come back and have people spit in your face and just kind of tell you, well, sorry, we don't have any place to put you. We don't have any food to give you. We don't have any mental health or even for regular health. We don't have anything for you.
This is Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM.
My name is Montgomery Garnett. I'm a veteran. I spent 8 years in the United States Marine Corps, and I spent 4 years in the United States Army Reserve. I'm a proud veteran.
A proud veteran. You would like to elaborate on that about being a proud veteran?
Yes, yes. Well, I'm honored to have had the opportunity to serve this great nation. And I think it's been a great blessing. I think it's given me the right to say that I've earned the freedom that I deserve in this nation.
What freedom is that?
Well, the freedom to be able to travel freely and go freely anywhere in this United States, which is classified in the public domain. So wherever any American is authorized to travel freely without any sort of harassment, to make free decisions concerning political office or voting and things of that nature. There are certain freedoms that Americans are guaranteed, and the Constitution guarantees these in the rights that are given to the people. And so those are the rights I serve to protect, and that's what I'm referring to.
And that's why you went to the fight for this country, for the free rights.
Well, that's why I joined the service, because I believe in this nation.
Are you homeless by choice or due to circumstances?
That's a very difficult question for me to answer, because I wouldn't classify myself as being homeless by choice, but there are other people that might classify myself as such. But there are certain situations that I've gone through in my life for certain reasons, and some people may classify me as homeless, but my determination is that I walk amongst veterans because there are veterans that need help, and to make sure that the system is treating them properly.
Do you see a lot of homeless veterans?
The battlefield is a very complex environment. The military is a society within itself. So we have, example, a minimum of at least two societies in America. We have the military, which has all their own laws and rules and regulations. And we have our society, which have their own laws and rules and regulations. So the battlefield and the training that a veteran receives when he joins the military can cause him to not properly fit into the civilian society. And therefore, because he does not fit in, he may find himself lacking housing.
That veteran, he or she was entwined and fed into the social standard, the life, before they went to the military, but the training took them out that mind frame. Do you think they should have training to put them back into that mind frame?
You can't do that, because you see, once you're a veteran, you're always a veteran. You're always going to be affected by the training that you receive.
This is Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM. And in this segment of our radio show, we interviewing homeless military veterans who went to defend this country so we can have a safe place to live. I'm in Ground Zero, Portland, interviewing homeless veteran, and with me today is
Earl Gates.
Earl Gates, are you homeless?
Yes.
Is that by choice or systematic?
Systematic.
Would you like to tell me about that?
Well, I can't seem like to get a job that that paid me 40 hours or 50 hours a week where I could substantiate myself and anyone that would be associated with me, substantiate us to where we can have a modest existence. Yeah.
Are you a military vet?
Yeah, I'm a veteran of the Vietnam War.
How does it feel like to a homeless veteran?
It feels like when we came home, nobody cares. Now veterans get a hero's welcome from the public. You know, we didn't. So I'm not jealous of the veterans that get it. You know, I just want to tell them that from the very first African-American veteran, we have been lied to, and they're still lying to us. And our first African-American veteran was Crispus Attucks. He was a veteran of the Revolutionary War.
So he was the first one to get killed, wasn't he, in the Revolutionary War, the first American, right?
That is correct.
Most people don't know that. So do you feel like that a football player, when they get hurt, they have a tendency to get proper medical help and they got a retirement fund, and you go out and put your life on the line for this country and you receive a pulpus fund? That's what you're saying?
That's exactly what it is. You know, you want to give me a GI Bill, but you don't want it to include if I manage to come home with both legs and both arms and not claim no disability, but I can't get dental. I can't get glasses. You know, but if I got a 5% disability or better, I can get those things. You know, that's the way they say it.
What do you think the government should do for not just African-American homeless vet, but for veterans per se?
Have more training available for different jobs. Have more training available that of someone that was combat ready instead of just book ready. There was a lot of veterans in my family. I have a veteran in my family from World War II, the Korean War, and two of us from the Vietnam War. And, you know, they didn't trust them to run $50 machines, but they ran $500,000 machines in the service. It's got to be a better correlation, you know, regardless of how that person and their mental state in bad situations didn't help, and they can't come back here and get no help. You know, I don't lost all the veterans in my family, and that was one of their biggest complaints.
So what is it that you want to tell the American public about black military veterans or veterans, any veteran?
I want to cover the African-American veterans, and I want this government to go back to the very first one and keep the promise that where he so willingly gave up his life. And that was a promise for a major contribution for our U.S. Constitution. We have to go back there. And I believe that once we go back there and rectify that, it makes me feel that as long as that's not honored, then the veterans now of Gulf Wars or Iraq and everything, we won't feel like that's the only way we might be able to afford a house. You know, that might be not the only way that we can afford a college education, you know, that I have half a hand, no legs. I got to sacrifice body parts so I can get an education. But I want them to go back and honor to the very first one. Just amend that Constitution that African-American men can have 100% under Article 13 instead of 3/4% if my master decided to give it to me.
For the listening audience that's not in depth on Article 13, can you explain what that means?
That is the part of the Constitution that our founding fathers put in that allowed Negroes, as they put it, three quarters citizenship under our governing body, under the Constitution. It's kind of hard to explain that under that we only get three quarters. Under the 21st, the power of women, so that means black women, Puerto Rican women, Jewish women, all women, has 100% under the Constitution. Where'd that lead the black man? Everything is shot at us. Where'd that lead the black man? My woman get 100% and I can't get three quarters fully. Where'd that leave us?
They willing to let a black man go fight for this country, and once he's done fighting, he's no longer recognized as a citizen. That's what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying.
And by being a vet, it's even worse for him to come back to this country.
Because we're fighting for that exact same Constitution, for a chance to pursue life, liberty,
and the pursuit of happiness, right?
And so far, our pursuit ain't doing too good.
So what do you think our solution to homeless veterans, and what do you think should happen?
For the homeless vet, some vets don't want to be inside no more. And for those that do, you know, you couldn't bring them in. But we should have a shelter that is for us if the government would pay our per diem for us to be there, to get on our feet, to kick a bad drug habit, to come out of a bankruptcy where he's losing everything, maybe so he won't feel suicidal and not have anything and take a family hostage and do the wrong things.
This is Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7. And in this segment, we're out on Ground Zero in the streets of Portland, Oregon, interviewing homeless military veterans. And today I'm here with
Michelle Wilson.
Are you a homeless veteran?
Yes, I am.
Of what war?
Vietnam.
How do you feel being a homeless veteran that fought for this country?
I feel pretty bad because the way that the government is treating all homeless vets, they're ignoring them like they don't exist. I have a friend right now who was in the military for some years and had the rank of an E6, and they're telling him he doesn't have a service record. Excuse me, but that's not right. And they're telling me now that I have to do certain things if I want to get services from them over at the regional office. And I already told them flat out, I says, there's nothing I can do with a criminal record background. There's a lot of things they cannot do for me because of it. So I went over to Northwest Pilot Project yesterday, 1026, and I was told basically straight to my face, they're not going to be able to help me at all.
Do you know the reason why?
The felony record, that is the reason why.
No matter if you're a veteran or not.
It doesn't make any difference. They're still telling me because of the felony record, I cannot get a place to live unless it's an SRO. I have a caregiver. I have to have somebody with me because of my brain tumor. And there is nothing that they can do for me because of it.
For the listening audience, including myself, what's an E4?
An E4 is a buck sergeant or a spec 4. Either way, it still comes out the same. I went to Vietnam and I came back here to this country, and I was still awaiting discharge, and they treated me like crap. And they even found a way to put me through a court-martial so they wouldn't have to pay me so much severance pay. And that was not right either. But they did it anyway. Back in the 60s, they did things like that. Nowadays, they can't. But then they did. And I lost a lot of money because of it.
Do you think the military, the government, and the people of this country betrayed you?
I think what they did to me was wrong, yes. And I think I need, personally, myself, I need to start advocating for those people like myself who are in the same boat, to make sure that this doesn't happen to anybody else. And that's the way I'm going to handle it. That's the way I've been handling it. Sure, I can't get what I need, but maybe I can get something for somebody else.
We know you're a homeless veteran. We know you went to Vietnam. We know you put your life on the line for this country by standing in front of bullets and bombs and all kind of booby traps. Do you want to tell the listening audience your personal preference gender and talk a little bit about that?
I'm a transsexual. I have been since I was 6 years old. Right now I'm in the process of going through the transfer from male to female. And that is another thing that they are very reluctant to help me with. I can't even get some of my medications that I need because of what I'm doing. They won't give them to me. There's one medication I need to get, which is my spironolactone. It's what they call a testosterone blocker. And it blocks the production of that. Well, they just recently cut me off of that and told me I can't have it anymore because they're just not going to do it. And I told them, I says, you know what? I says, you people are really not right here. This is not acceptable to me. It's not acceptable to anyone else. But yet they still continue.
You was this way since you were 6 years old, since you was able to recognize, and that is that you have a female body from the waist up and the male body from the waist down. Okay. You went into the military. Did they notice?
I wasn't in the military when I was going through this process then. I started this 4 years ago after I was out of the military, long after. But the thing of it is, and I knew then when I was 6 years old that there was something different about me, that I wasn't quite what I was supposed to be. And it's just the way I am. I have accepted this. I have dealt with it. And I am dealing with it. Not that I'm getting the help I need, but I'm still dealing with it.
So, did you have any difficulties with this while you was in the military?
Yeah, I did. It was very scary for me at first when I was going through basic training because of it. But really, in all actuality, I had no choice. The court, when I was 17 and a half years old, gave me a choice. Either I go into the military or I go to jail until I was 21. And I said, no, I'm not going to jail. So I took the military route. And I was in Vietnam for approximately 2 weeks before I got injured. I was 50 feet away from the building and got hit by a 110.
A 110 millimeter rocket, okay. Do you think that the people here in this country treat you fair by three things, a homeless veteran, a homeless person, and a transgender?
No, I'm not getting treated as fairly as I should be, no. Basically what they're doing is they're trying to shun me because of what I'm doing. And I don't think that's fair to me. I don't think it's fair to any of the other trans people who are from my era, which happens to be the late 40s and 50s. A lot of us back then couldn't do anything about what we were because it was not acceptable. And it didn't become acceptable until the middle 80s. So I had a long ways to go before I could even get help for this.
By being in the military, did anyone ever refuse to serve with you?
No, they didn't. I didn't have any problems in that regards because I didn't let anybody know. I kept it to myself right from the get-go. My mother and father didn't even know. I kept that from them. Well, my mother knew to a certain extent that I was this way, but she ignored it. And didn't let me do what I needed to do to be myself. So I've had to argue and fight and scrape and do whatever I could to be myself. And it has not been easy.
So it's safe to say that no matter what sexual personal preference, no matter if you stole candy off the shelf, if you can fight for this country, and perform to have this country free, you should get proper benefits.
I should, yes. But that's not always the way it is. This gentleman that I was talking about at the beginning of the interview, he was told in Houston, Texas, that he was eligible for 100% disability, and they won't give it to him. He's got cancer from Agent Orange, like I do. He's got several other problems, heart. He's even got a pacemaker. But they're not even going to touch him. They won't even go anywhere near him. And I'm thinking to myself, why? What is your problem?
Do you see more homeless vets on the street now, or is the toll growing, or are they getting off the street?
Most of the homeless vets that I know of that are coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan are ending up out on the streets because of emotional problems or other things, handicaps that they have incurred while they've been there. And those are the kinds of things that most people don't know. They don't see this. They don't understand. How can a veteran be homeless? Well, it's simple. You don't have the proper money for housing. You don't have the proper help for housing. Or you have people who just don't care anymore. They're so inundated right now with all these veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan.
You are listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7. You just heard from Michelle, a unhoused Viet vet, who is also transgender. Next, you'll hear from Alice.
Being a homeless vet and a gay homeless vet living on the street, is that like double indemnity? Is that double hardship on you?
Yeah, I think it is. Ironically enough, I mean, Portland is a lucky city because it doesn't seem like sexual orientation is a big issue here. But, you know, I find more people on the street willing to do for me and send me in the right direction than the actual Veterans Administration. Because when I came here, the VA made me homeless because they flew me here from Idaho, said, we knew you were here, we didn't know why you were coming. So go find out your resources on your own, which from my understanding is quite common with the VA hospital here or the Veteran Administration. And I found out my resources from homeless people themselves that, you know, were vets, said, go here, go there, do this, do that. I mean, they gave me the game plan and I followed through with it. But, you know, you get into a shelter, you're there for 4 months, and if you have a case manager that's not really gung-ho on working on your case, you end up right back on the street again. So it's a revolving cycle, a revolving door. You end up on the street, get in a shelter. On the street, in a shelter. So, you know, if you're lucky, 6 months out of the year, you might be in a shelter. But then with vets, we're given a per diem program, which only gives us 3 per diems per lifetime, which is stupid. I mean, and once you've expended those 3 per diems, it takes a special authorization to get another one. So you're only allowed in the shelter 3 times, and then you're basically screwed and you have no resources to go to.
So after that 3 times, you on the street, no and, if, and buts, no matter if you got inside and you tried to do well or whatever, you just allowed 3 times in a shelter.
Basically, yeah. I mean, you know, after those 3 per diems, you're screwed. And then, of course, I mean, I have AIDS, so, you know, I've got a double whammy, my health and my being homeless, and they don't even take that into account. It's like, you know, I would think they'd say, oh, okay, here's a veteran that's got a health issue, whether it be having AIDS, whether it be having cancer, whether it be having heart problems, PTSD or whatever. It's like, okay, well, you know, you're just going to fit right in with the rest of us. So somebody that doesn't suffer these things is getting, you know, sometimes preferential treatment over the other one because it's been cost more money to deal with somebody that's got PTSD or AIDS or cancer or high blood pressure or whatever health issues that can severely adversely affect your health being on the street. They would rather devote their energy to people that don't have health issues. That's my personal opinion and how I'm taking it.
Do you think the military or this government or people of this country betrayed you?
I think the government's betrayed us because CNN did a study several years ago, and we treat our veterans in this country worse than any third world country treats theirs. I mean, Iran treats their veterans better than we treat our veterans, and they have more resources from them. And if they're going to put all this money into defense, then why don't they devote more money into the Veterans Administration? But, you know, the budget increase for the VA is very minimal to what it goes for the defense budget.
So is it safe to say that the government is unable to support the veterans that come, or they just don't?
I don't think they're unable. I think they just don't. I mean, the government wastes money on so many areas. I mean, we've got such a high deficit now that we've got to pay down. I'm not going to say who's caused it or whatever. It's been caused by several different factors. But the government's able if they would restructure their resource system.
What do you think they should do?
I think they should divert money out of the defense budget. I mean, we're not talking cut our defense budget so severe that we don't have a defense. Stop fighting wars that we don't need to fight. We went to Iraq, and it was something we didn't need to do. We lost countless thousands of servicemen over there and women. We're in Afghanistan chasing, you know, somebody that we're never going to catch, and he's probably already dead. You know, so we're in two areas that we really don't need to be in my opinion. And, you know, I mean, if I was in the military, I'd go because I had to, but I would not agree to it. If they took a tenth of the money they spent in Iraq on the entire war and put it into the Veterans Administration, there would be more vouchers available for people to get housing. But we would rather dump the money into fighting wars and supporting governments that we don't need to be doing. And it's hurt veterans as a whole, and it's hurt Americans as a whole.
If you had an opportunity to go back, would you go fight for this country, for the freedom?
Yeah. I mean, to me, when I was in the military, it was the best thing I ever did. I come from a very strong military family, and I felt it was an obligation that I give back because my family history, we've kept this country free from, like, speaking German or Japanese. You know, granted, some things may have not been, you know, something we need to be involved in over the years, like Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan. But if I was ever called back, which I can't because I'm too old now, but if I'd ever been called back, I would have went back and served my country because I felt it's an obligation. I mean, it's a duty. I personally think we should do like other countries, that every young kid has to serve 2 years in the military. One, it makes them grow up. It teaches them responsibility, values, different things that just to get by in life. And, I mean, I would never refuse to serve my country ever again. Even though I've been given the short end of the stick, I feel like I've been kicked from system to system. What should be there isn't there. I'd still serve my country.
After walking the streets for 3 weeks, I finally came across a woman homeless veteran. I spoke to her by phone, and what an eyebrow-raising interview it is. Francisca Lee, are you a veteran?
Yes, I am.
Okay, are you a homeless veteran?
Yes, I'm in a grant per diem program, which helps us transition to permanent housing.
I've been on the streets for 10 years helping homeless people, and being a former homeless myself, it's a rare thing that I get to see and talk to a homeless veteran that's a woman. Can you tell me why is that I see more homeless veteran males than I do females?
Actually, in the armed forces, there are not as many female veterans. And those that are around and happen to be homeless, they have a greater chance of being able to stay with somebody, even if it's just temporary. The average person's heart goes out to a woman quicker than it will a man because of the gender, you know. But a lot of female vets are still on the streets, but they're not actually announcing that they're veterans. You have to get to know them to even find out if they're a veteran. They might not even tell you. I don't know if it's a pride thing or just the situation they're in and they feel like they failed.
Do the society, the public, the government, or the military make them feel like they're a failure?
Well, actually, it's not a lot of programs for women vets. You have all kind of programs for vets in general, but it's usually geared to male vets. There's not a lot of places for women vets to go. If you end up homeless, you end up going to a woman's shelter or abuse shelter or something like that. But there is nothing specifically out there for women veterans. The VA is trying to start that up. They have a new women veteran thing, and they're testing it out, and I'm a part of that. We have brought the awareness to the VA, and the VA is trying to address that, but it's just in the beginning stages.
How does it feel to be homeless and a homeless veteran?
Actually, it kind of hurts your pride, being that you serve your country, you're a proud individual, you know you can succeed, and then things happen. You may get ill, lose your job, get a divorce. There can be a number of reasons why you end up in that predicament. And once in that predicament, your self-esteem is beaten up because you're used to succeeding. And when you feel like that you're not succeeding at that time, it can really weigh down on you. And having a program out there, build women back up, help them become more self-sufficient, get their own permanent housing and a job or a career that they can be proud of is what we're trying to address
right now. On this segment of Right to Survive Radio,
the military and the government are not able to support
women. I ask what the public can do to help.
I believe
and
the support is there. There is more women veterans
should be a solution
now than
it used to be.
It was predominantly
veterans.
For men. I would say there is a small percentage, maybe less than 10%, of women veterans out there. But now it's more because the Army has more. I'm a Marine myself, so we have less than 5% women veterans out there. It's just not that many of us. And the VA is really trying to address these issues. That's why there's the Grant Per Diem program. They have called a VASH program. It's sort of like Section 8 or HUD to assist people into getting their own permanent housing to be self-sufficient. But like I said, it's still at the beginning stages, getting them to understand that, you know, one, the woman may need counseling. She may need help on getting on her feet, you know. And so I'm on the women committee and at the VA and different places, and I'm trying to bring that up and get this working. We just now got at the VA hospital a women's clinic. A lot of women didn't go to the VA hospital, being that they didn't want to talk about certain things with men veterans, you know, or men doctors. So it's a lot of issues out there, but they all fit into the same criteria. The women are a smaller minority. And the VA is really starting to take an interest in how to help the women veterans because we're bringing it to their attention, to the table.
Let me make clear something to the listening audience and to me also that you can enlighten us on. We know that this is a misogynistic country, and for a while, women wasn't allowed in the military. What was it like being in the military, being a woman?
How can I sum that up? You're a minority. A lot of times there were people in the military, either your comrades or people over you, that didn't even want, because they were from when the service hadn't allowed women in. And now that they're allowing women in, and we're doing more and more, and we're becoming more active and more on the forefront, you get all kind of barriers, you know. There's higher ranking that doesn't acknowledge you because they don't feel you can do the job. There's not really no support system, I don't feel, because there's no other women. Like, if you have a problem and you want to address it, there's no one you can run to and talk to. You know, you're running to another man, and how is he going to help you with a situation saying you're feeling discriminated because you're a woman? You didn't get the promotion because you're a woman. You're qualified for the job. You made the score, and you don't get the promotion. You get passed over. So who do you talk to? So I think it's changing. I'm not saying it's changing overnight, but I'm not in right now. I got out in 93. But in the last, say, maybe 2 or 3 years, I've seen some improvement. Being that I became homeless, I found out that there was not a places and support system for women veterans. And I started bringing that to the table because, you know, I didn't know that we didn't have anything available. It's availability for men, but there's not nothing there for women.
I talk with numerous of veteran males of different personal preference. I talk with veterans that was African-American. I talked with veterans that was gay. From what I get and out of the understanding is that your benefit is really dependent on the person you go see behind that desk. And they were saying because of their personal preference and the color of their skin, their benefits may not all been intact as if it was a white male. Now, by you being a woman, do you think that's the case of some prejudice in there exists?
When I got out of the service, conveniently, my records got lost for like 7 years. I thought that was kind of convenient, and it took them 7 years to find it. I mean, that's a long time. Finally, they find my records, and then I kept getting denied. But I had issues that came up from when I was in Saudi Arabia, and it was documented. But not having the records, it was my word against their word. So I had to fight for almost 10 years to get my disability rating. And it kept getting denied, and after it got denied several times, finally, they gave me the lowest percentage you can have, which is 10%, which, you know, you're always struggling to get more. For those 10 years, I had to go outside of the VA for any kind of medical assistance. And I think women just don't, I don't feel that we're looked at as equals. We do the same job. We go through boot camp. We serve our country, and we're just as dedicated as the next person, the next man, but we're overlooked. I think that we need to address that a little bit more. There may be things that I may be afflicted with that may not afflict a man because of the way our bodies are built differently, you know. So
did you see actual combat?
Yes, I was in Saudi Arabia in 1992 during when Hussein was in, and he was about to give up. The knowledge of learning about post-traumatic stress, a lot of times it doesn't even show up for years. You know, so, but they don't believe that women, even though you're not right there on the front line, you're in combat. Right. You're in combat mode. You're in the area of everything. You're going through all the things that everybody else is going through, but you're overlooked.
Now tell me this. A man is surrounded by his enemies, and this is a scenario I drew for the homeless vet that said he was gay. He's surrounded by enemies, and here you come. Here come a squad of women coming to save him and to rescue him. Is he going to say, wait a minute, time out, send me a man because they fight better or something? Or would he accept you helping them out?
Actually, it depends on the individual. I've been in situations similar to that, not as that actual situation, but some men are like, oh, my God, if you hadn't showed up, you know, thank goodness you were here. You know, you're a Marine. Your Army, your Air Force, they're not looking at you as an individual, as a female, you know. It doesn't matter to them at that time. But then, you know, there can be situations where they get embarrassed that a woman saved them. So it depends on the individual and how they... But if the military addressed that women should be looked at as an equal, I think it would go over a little better because it's an undertone that we are not looked at as equal.
Shoot, I don't know what's wrong with them. I wouldn't care if you were blind, crippled, or crazy. If you're coming to save me, you're going to save me. I tell you.
Well, actually, it has to do with the individual. Some individuals, you know, I broke records in the hang, and that started in boot camp.
Yeah.
And every time I would beat a male, especially if he's from another squadron, it did a lot too, you know, to their ego. You know, this woman beat me. You know, they take that offensively.
So you tell me you go over there to fight for this country's rights and its freedom, and then you had to come back to the country you fought for to fight for your rights and freedom, the right to survive, the right to have housing, the right to have food, the right to voice your opinion, the right to get a job.
Of course, yes. And I think it's getting better than it has been. From the time when I got out in the early 90s until, you know, 2000, it was a struggle. Seven full years, I'm saying, I'm a vet just like you. Why you can't find my record, you know? And you're saying, you know, you can't be qualified as a disabled vet or even just as a veteran until they have paperwork, you know? So... And then you have individuals that don't believe women are true veterans. You understand what I'm saying? They don't feel like, well, you didn't actually be on the front line, but I was at war. I was fighting for my country, too. You know, exactly. I gave up family and everything to be where I wanted to be, to do what I wanted to do. That was my job, and I enjoyed doing it for God, country, and, you know, and... Now you're telling me that I don't rate the same thing as a man. That's not fair. That's not fair to me. I'm an advocate for women veterans anyway. It's an uphill battle, but, you know, I think it's coming around. Shows like this will bring more awareness to it.
Yes. Would you fight for your country again?
In a minute.
What do you think the community, this country, the citizens, the people can do to support homeless veterans?
I think one of the things they can do, as far as that's concerned, is try and find housing for people like myself who have felony records and who are veterans of Vietnam or Iraq or Afghanistan, and make sure that these people have housing. Not that it's going to be easy, because a lot of times it isn't. I have PTSD problems. I have nightmares as to what I went through all the time. That's why they got me on Prozac. So, you know, but at the same time, I expect to be treated fairly, and I'm not being treated fairly. I'm being treated like a class 5 citizen instead of a class 1 citizen, which I should be. So, you know, excuse me, but that's not appropriate.
I think we need to put more money into the mental health area, because, for one, like I said, a lot of them are coming back goofed up in the head. They didn't leave here that way, but they're coming back that way. There needs to be a period of training to say, hey, look, you're coming back into society. We've trained you to do this. Now let's help train you to be a human being again. And there also needs to be more low-income housing. You know, provide them with a house, say, for maybe a year. Once they get out, and tell them, hey, look, you know, this is for a year. We're going to help you. That money needs to increase. Because I've been in veterans programs where they put you in housing and stuff. But the money right now is the big situation. Because they don't have the funds to run what's needed.
How can the community, the citizens, or the American people support homeless vets?
You find out a person is a veteran, thank him. And say, we're glad you come home. Thank you for standing up for us. To help build their self, it builds a self-esteem. Instead of a veteran always walking around with their head down, 99%, I would say, of the veterans that are on the street don't want to be there. But it's the things that have happened in their lives. And if we can offer them a way out, not a handout, but a way out, a hand up. If you have a job that a veteran can do, he's got the training, why not let that man have a job? If you got a spare room in your house, why not rent it to a veteran? If you have, you know, spare clothes are another thing. Find an organization. Portland Vet Center, for one. Last I knew, distributed clothes. There's many many places that will give. Union Gospel Mission, Portland Rescue Mission, Sisters of the Road has done a lot to help with the veterans. In fact, I'm working on something right now for Veterans Day for Sisters here. And, you know, if I may, I would just like to welcome anyone who would like to come down on Veterans Day. We're trying to work on possibly doing a what they call a wall of hope and healing. For those that haven't come back, and a way to say thank you. You know, if you support people like Sisters of the Road, Union Gospel Mission, Portland Rescue Mission, any of the shelters around, that is a big help. Central City Concern has a lot of good services, but there's not enough funds.
How can the community support homeless veterans?
But treat them like they got a disease. You know, sure, we come back with some hangups. Alcoholism, drug addiction, you know, wives and things like that. But it seemed like if you say you're a veteran, you know, people step aside and, you know, like you got Shiola on you or something, you know. But like I say, nowadays you say you're a Gulf vet, Grenada vet, you know, what war you was in, you know, they welcome on the parade, you know, but it just seemed like at a time now, you know, we the Vietnam veterans, Korean veterans, people of those wars are, you know, we're playing catch up.
Do you feel the government betrayed the veterans?
Yeah.
You know, people look at vets, they look at everybody that, you know, we're demanding special privileges, and we're not. We just want the same thing that everybody else wants, a home, we can an address we can call our own, that we're not, you know, going to soup kitchens, we're not having to scrummage through garbage cans, which, I mean, I've seen that a lot, just to get food, where, you know, having a house is a human right. It's a human and a basic right.
You have to remember, homelessness is a failure of government. People are homeless because the government has failed. It's the bottom line. And so that in order for them to properly address homelessness, they have to become more efficient.
What are some of the solutions that you think could work?
I think we need separate facilities for women vets to go, whether they need counseling. Well, we do have a separate facility for them to go for their medical care now. That was a big fight, and it's finally been input. So we have a women's clinic at the VA hospital now, which is dynamic. You're separate from the men. It's not that you're, you know, you want to be. There's certain things a woman just don't want to do, sitting next to, you know, being in their hospital. You don't want to see a male doctor for certain issues. And everybody that's working in that women's clinic is women. So, I mean, you know, there's some women that had military sexual trauma, PTSD. There's, you know, they've had women that had all kind of issues, and they really, we're hoping that they feel more comfortable coming to a women clinic, which is ran by women.
How do you think the community can support homeless veteran women, Fran?
We need somewhere for women that if they become homeless, that they have a safe place to stay, and help them get on their feet, because they want to be on their own feet, you know, to help them assist in becoming self-sufficient. So her self-esteem, her confidence and everything will come back. You know, everybody have down times and down days, but, if we can assist them into helping themselves to become self-sufficient, get their own housing, get their own careers, I think that's what we need mostly here. We really need a facility for women, you know, for women veterans specifically.
Okay. Is it any one last thing you want to say to the listening audience? Because that's about all I have to ask you.
I just want to thank you for bringing awareness to this, and it was my pleasure to talk to you, and hopefully the women out there hear it, and they step up and come in, and if they have any better suggestions, we'd love to hear them. So we want to hear their voices, not just on the battlefield, but here at home, too, so we want to hear their voices.
Okay. From the Right to Survive Radio family and KBOO, we want to thank you for fighting and protecting our freedom in this country, and we appreciate you more, and good talking with you. And if you see me on the street and I'm surrounded by people, please come save me.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Thank you, Mom.
All right.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Do you think the government and the military are unable to support homeless veterans?
This government can support anything. We have the wealth, we have the power, the resources, we have the wisdom and the knowledge.
I am Ibrahim Mubarak. I want to thank you for listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM. We also want to thank all the houseless vets that participated on our show, and for the vets, houseless or not, for protecting our country. We thank you all. Thoroughly directed at war in the community.
Somebody help me.
That's work.
This is not healthy.
Man.
I am not wealthy.
Please contact us at R2SPDX writetosurvive@gmail.com. And check out our blog at writetosurvive.wordpress.com.
Racial prejudice. Take back oceans of torment to murder for profit. Noxious nonsense. You've been listening to Right to Survive Radio here on KBOO Portland. Up next, we're going to hear Workers Independent News, followed by Hard Knock Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Unions and the Fight for $15 brunch and discussion on Saturday, November 15th at 10:30 a.m. The event features Elizabeth Alexander, Vice President of Politics for SEIU 1021 in the San Francisco Bay Area, and Nicole Grant, President of the Washington Young Emerging Labor Leaders. Again, that's the Unions and the Fight for $15 brunch and discussion on Saturday, November 15th at 10:30 a.m. at the AFL-CIO Oregon, 3645 Southeast 32nd Avenue in Portland. More information may be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're tuned to KBOO Portland. Up next, it's going to be Hard Knock Radio. Host Davey D speaks with Effia Wangaza of the Malcolm X Center for Self-Determination about the UN conference in Geneva. And Greg Bridges speaks with Malkia Cyril of the Center for Media Justice about net neutrality. And before that, we're going to hear Workers Independent News.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. Four postal worker unions are uniting for a day of action Friday protesting postal service cuts that cost jobs and slow down mail delivery. The union